Hi, guys, and welcome to Keep Hope Alive. We are in season 16, episode 2. I'm so happy to be back doing my podcasts. And thank you for my followers following me and wishing me well. That means a lot to me. But today we got the most amazing guest here. His name is Rick Davis, and he is here to talk to us about a book. But he is from Colorado, right? And he does so many things with the fire station, but he goes into coaching, leadership training. So we're going to dive in there and talk about all that stuff as well. I'm just excited because they call him Jersey Rick. And if you know me, I'm Jersey Girl. So had to give your nickname out. Sorry. Yeah, but welcome to Keep Hope Alive.
Well, thanks, Nadine. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. Okay. Before we get started, I always have the simple question. How many weddings have you been to in the last, let's say, 20 years?
20 years. I definitely can recall three since end of 2020, but 20 years, that's really stretching.
That's a long time. Actually,
short memory. Maybe five.
Five. Okay. I got another question for you. So, say you're the guest, you're going into the church. Usually there's something for the guest to sign. What is that called?
Well, normally I have my wife sign the guest book because they can read her handwriting.
That is accurate. Yes. So Life on Record is one of our biggest sponsors here, which is amazing. Instead of doing a guest book, what they do is they have a vintage rotary phone. So your guests walk in, they can pick up the phone and say, "Congratulations on your wedding." Or maybe it's a groomsman. "It's about time you put that ring on her finger." You know, it's the gift of voice. Now, what I find really cool about this phone, you can leave the message for 1 minute, 5 minutes, 30 minutes. But if it's a wedding, I say, don't do 30 minutes. That's just way too long. But they put a QR code right next to that phone. So your guests can take out their mobile phone to scan it and leave the message before or even after. Now, you get this 800 number. I wish you got the phone for the year, but you have to return the phone. But you get this phone number for a year. So they are collecting messages throughout the year if you want to. And what they do after they collect all these messages, they'll either burn it on a 12-inch vinyl record for you. And the album is so cute. They can personalize their names and everything. Or you can do a keepsake speaker and have that as well. So it makes it a fun gift, especially if it is a wedding. You can use it for any kind of event, but just going back and listening to everybody talk, your friends and family, that can be a fun time to hear those voices and everything. But their plans start at $99, which is a good deal. And you can find more information about them at www.lifeonrecord.com. So would you use that for any of your events?
That sounds very, very unique. It's something that you can, you know, keep around because you have their voice. Similar to, you know, my wife has a phone message on her phone from her mother, and her mother died on Christmas Day in 2021. And so she still has that message so she can hear her voice.
You see, and that is something I always wanted to bring up. When I say it's the voice that we're collecting, you know, I've never really talked about it on my podcast, but bringing it up, my friend passed away a year and a half ago, and I have her message going, "Okay, I love you, girl," because we talked all the time, but I was like, that's the last time I heard her voice. And then I heard that you could take that voice, what was it, Build-A-Bear or something, you can put it in there and Build-A-Bear to listen to it. But I was like, I don't want to do that. But when Life on Record came about, I was like, I would want to hear everybody's voice again. I really would. And for that reason as well. So I call it the gift of voice. You know, have fun with it. Tell jokes. Call back. Leave another message. There's so much you can do with that company, which is amazing. So, but yeah, passings are really, they're hard. But when you can hear the voice again, like your wife, it does. Yeah. That's amazing. So. Now, you have an accent. You're from Jersey like I am.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in Jersey? I know you did most of your stuff in Colorado. And, you know, I'm going to ask you, who is Rick? Anyway, so let's start there.
Okay. Well, you're right. I'm born and raised in South Jersey in Cumberland County. And then even when I was in the military, I was stationed down North Carolina. So I spent a lot of time driving up and down I-95, going back home. And then when we got married, we would go back, you know, quite a bit, you know, for 2-3 weeks at a clip. And so even though I was living out here in Colorado, got back to Jersey. And seeing as how you're from Jersey, you'll get a kick out of this. Lots of times, somebody will ask me, how did you get from Jersey to Colorado? And straight face, I'll say, witness protection program. And some of them laugh. And I've had some of them, wow, really? That's interesting. It's like, hey, I'm kidding you. If I was actually in the witness protection program, I would not be saying that.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think you can.
Yeah. Yeah, but so, yeah, so who is Rick? Rick grew up down there, you know, in South Jersey. And the picture that I have behind me in my background was the first fire engine that I rode when I was 3 years old. I was one of those kids that knew from early age what I wanted to do. Two things that I wanted to do, be a firefighter and be in the military. And I fulfilled both of those throughout my lifetime. And a year after riding that fire engine in a Memorial Day parade, my dad gave me his badge because he'd been a volunteer firefighter in another town in southern New Jersey. And he, too, was a military veteran from the Coast Guard. Our family has a military history that goes all the way back to the colonial era. We had ancestors that fought in New Jersey and Pennsylvania regiments against the British. And then also some that were privateers as well. And so, you know, that has all played into my history and my path throughout life. So many of our relatives had served in the military. My Uncle Kent had also been a volunteer fireman along with my dad, but he had a bad experience and decided to quit. And then he wound up in Korea during the Korean War. It's like, yeah, I guess that's quite a trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what contributed to my path along being a firefighter is my Aunt Phyllis and Uncle Cliff lived next door to us. And Aunt Phyllis was my dad's sister. She worked with a fella named Frenchie, Art French. And he was on the volunteer fire department there in Cedarville. And he knew my interest. And so he would send old equipment catalogs home with Aunt Phyllis to give to me. Frenchie would make arrangements for my dad to take me down to the firehouse when they were having drill nights. And then when the fire siren went off and my dad was home, we'd always go out to the street and watch and see which way the trucks went. And sometimes we'd chase them. So I grew up doing that. And I really wanted to be a firefighter. My dad, he wanted me to go to college, and he had quit high school to go into the military to support his mother. His dad had died towards the end of World War II from a heart attack. And my dad's brother, Wesley, had been in the Marine Corps and was killed out in the Central Pacific on February 1st, 1944. So there had been a lot of death associated. They come out of the Depression, and dad quits high school to go to the Coast Guard to support his mom. He ultimately did finish high school, got a GED, and went on night school, and he wanted me and my brother to go. Well, as the time went on, Nadine, my dad had a bad heart, a really bad heart, and how heart patients were treated back then compared to now, it's just night and day. We were doing more in the street in the fire department than what they were doing in the emergency room when he had his first heart attack.
Wow.
So when I was 14, he actually had been put on permanent disability. That's how they treated heart patients back then. They put him on permanent disability. My mom was working in one of the glass factories there in South Jersey. The glass industry was big. And I came home from school when I was 14, and there he was. He was on the floor. And he had died.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, fifth and final heart attack. And my town didn't have an ambulance that came from the neighboring fire company. And I remember it very, very clearly, like it happened an hour ago. You know, they showed up and picked him up, put him on the gurney, and put him in the back of an ambulance, and took off up the street to the hospital. But as they were loading him in, I vowed, this is what I'm going to do, for a living. Prior to that, just a few months prior to that, the television show Emergency had come out on NBC. I watched that religiously every Saturday night. I still watch it. I record it. And then after Dad died, I started hanging out in the firehouse down the street, which was a big step for me because I was really introverted. But I forced myself to go down. And initially, I think those guys thought, everybody knew everybody in our town, but they're probably thinking, hey, what's he doing here? And after a while, I became a fixture. And Frenchie took me underneath his wings and started allowing me to do things around the firehouse. During that same time period, a guy by the name of Dennis Smith, who was a firefighter up in the Bronx with FDNY, wrote a book called Report from Engine Company 82. And it was a very influential book on me. It just reinforced what I wanted to do. When I turned 18, I joined the Cedarville Fire Company number one, and I also enlisted in the Air Force. And to condense that, I didn't get in the fire department initially. I wound up working on fighter jets, which I did not want. But the good thing is I was stationed in North Carolina, so up and down. I mean, my car was up and down I-95 constantly. It was like it's on autopilot. Then I eventually did get into the fire department, and you mentioned my book, and there's a story in there in the book about how I did it. There's a chapter on the good and the bad of determination, and I'm the example of the bad, of when you're determined and doing stupid things. Yes, I got into the fire department, but I won't spoil it for anybody who's going to read the book. Or listen to it because we're in the process of doing the audio. But
yay!
There's some lessons to be learned there. But I did get into the fire department. I was going to just stay for 20 years. And then the Air Force said they were going to send me back to my original career field. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. I got out and I went to work in federal civil service as a firefighter. And I was in Colorado at the time, and I had to go up to North Dakota to take the job. Transferred back to Colorado, decided to go to college, was too dumb to figure out that I could work my 24-hour shift and go to college on my days off. So I left the fire department, started going to college, ran out of money. I moved past my reinstatement date, couldn't get back in the fire department. So what do? Join the Marines. That's what I did. I joined the Marine Corps as a firefighter, and like I shipped down to Yuma, Arizona. And after a while in the Marine Corps, they said, hey, we got too many NCOs, which are non-commissioned officers, NCOs, and crash crew, pick a job. I did.
Oh, wow.
I didn't get the job, any one of the jobs that I picked. There's a story about that in the book also.
Make us all read this book.
Yeah.
Hey, guess what, guys? That book is on the store already. So you can click on the store.
Thank you, Nadine, for doing that. And so actually, it really worked out to my benefit that the Marines retrained me. They put me in the aviation operations. And as part of that, I learned how to type. How to type on an old IBM Selectric. And little did I know then, and I learned how to work a computer, little did I know then how important that would be later on in my life, even in the fire department, certainly writing a book. I injured my knees. I got put out on a medical discharge, but during that interim time period, Nadine, two of friends of mine who lived down in Englewood, which is on the south side of Denver, I went to church with them. His name was Dan. Well, Dan had gone to college with the gentleman who ultimately became my father-in-law. And my father-in-law was a pastor of a church here in Loveland. So Dan and Gwen had gone to Estes Park, Colorado on a second honeymoon. And they came back and said, hey, let's stop at the church. I haven't seen Glenn in years. And so they did. And afterwards, they went out to lunch and they took Deb with them. And their wheels got to turning. And they said, hey, I think Rick and Deb would work out for each other. There's a whole story with that. When she found out that I was in the Marine Corps and I was from Jersey, she said, I don't think so. And she had gone to Bible college and a pastor's daughter. And I said, I don't know about that either. You know, we're really two opposite worlds. And we started writing. We had a long distance relation. My first letter to her was 16 pages long. I sent her a picture of me sitting behind a machine gun in Norway. And we laugh now. We've been married over 36 years and we laugh now. I said, must have been that picture with me and the machine gun that did it. And we have two adult daughters. And so after I got out of the Marine Corps, I did have a job here before I got on to Loveland Fire Rescue. And so that's where I spent the last 30 years of my career. I worked my way up through the ranks. My last 15 years on the job here in Loveland, I was a battalion chief. Most of that time was a shift commander, but I did have, I think, about a 15, 16 month run as the training chief. And it was great. My wife, Deb, the girls were always supportive of what I did. I had opportunities to run just about every program the fire department had. My favorites were the hazmat team and the wildland firefighting program. But I was also in charge of the special operations team. I ran the recruiting program for 3 years, which I've taken things I learned there and have incorporated that into a program that I use to help people when they're going through promotional exams or entrance exams as well. So who's Rick? Jersey Rick. How did I get that name? That came from the guys at Loveland Fire. Part of it because, my accent, when I get really cranked up, or if I get around other people from like the Jersey or especially Philadelphia area, my wife says the accent really comes out. And
it does.
People from Jersey, are a little bit brash at times, not afraid to speak up. And that was something that was not present here in Colorado. And so I got tagged with Jersey Rick, and it has stuck with me. And that's the name of my podcast, Firehouse Talks with Jersey Rick, Igniting Leadership Excellence.
Cool. I need to change mine to Jersey Girl. Like people are like, you've been in Texas too long. And I was like, but as a kid, what I remember about Jersey was I could say hi to my neighbor and she would be so nice. Oh, I made fresh cookies. Come on over and get some. And then we moved to Plano, Texas. I was 6 years old. I said hi to my neighbor and they looked at me and looked away and just kept mowing. And I'm like, does nobody talk in Texas? Is nobody?
That's what it's like more so here as well. I was listening to one of your other podcasts and you had a guest who had said that she had been in San Diego and originally from San Diego and had moved. And I remember you making a comment, a lot of people from California moving to Texas. Well, it's been the same thing here. But the state is not as friendly, and I'm not blaming that on people from California by stretch of the imagination. But the state is not as friendly as it used to be at one time.
Yeah, definitely. I've been to California. It's been two times now. I was in Los Angeles and then Huntington Beach, and learning, a little bit about California is beautiful. But I always ask my question, would I ever move out there? And I was looking at the traffic and I'm like, no way.
No, I just returned from California a week ago. I was out there for 2 weeks doing hazardous materials training, specifically Dealing with the incident command system related to hazardous materials, teaching the safety aspect, tactical decision making, situational awareness, topics like that. We were doing field exercises, but I was way up on the North Coast in Humboldt County, very beautiful part of the state up there. And people really friendly up there. And you don't find, it's remote, you don't find the traffic problems up there in that part of the state like you do down in Southern California, where the guy that I teach with, I've been with him since, known him since 98, and we've been teaching together since 99. So we've done a lot of our teaching down in Southern California, and it's a rat race.
It is. It really is. I remember I had to go to Pasadena part, but after I was there, some people know I don't really want to get into it, but I went to go celebrate, and I wanted to go see Hollywood Boulevard and just walk around. But I went to get my car, but the only car that was available was not a taxi. It was a limo driver. And I looked at him, I go, how much do you charge just to get down the street? And he's just like, oh, don't worry, I got you. And I was like, okay. But then he goes, do you want to go see the Hollywood sign? I go, are you charging me for that? And he goes, no, I'll take your picture by the Hollywood sign too. So I got to take a little tour that way. But I remember getting off and walking down the boulevard, and it just felt good. And I saw Edward Scissorhands, like, you know, somebody. And I met another person there who is now a director and has moved all around and stuff. But it was a neat experience. And as a photographer, I'll just say I got my camera back. I took a, what was it, like a bus, one of those, but it was for 2 hours. And I'm a big soap opera fan. I love Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful. My thing was, I would do anything just to go be there and see it. Well, I was on that bus and they drove by it and they're like, that's where they film. And I'm like, whoa, is this where I'm going to jump off the bus? And I was like, I can't even remember what hotel I was staying at. And I go, nope, I'm not going to get lost in California. So.
Yeah, but it's, you know, when you, that original question, who is Rick? Now,
yeah,
part of it is the teaching that I do. And with making a contrast between, you know, California, we were out doing a class in Corona, California, which is down in Riverside County. And I went out to plan a field exercise. I stopped by a Starbucks, and it was up on a hill. And I was standing outside, and I was looking north and northwest and back towards the east, northeast, up towards the mountains. I could see I-15 running up way out there, to, you know, going up towards the Cajon Pass. But everything I could see was buildings, buildings and freeways, and, you know, commercial buildings, warehouses. Yeah. Apartment buildings, houses. And so, because I've been down there so much, I'm thinking from where I'm at here to get down to I-15 to go to where I can see it headed up to the Cajon Pass with the traffic is probably going to be somewhere between a 2.5 and 3 hour ride. And then I thought, I go to Center City, Philly, 2.5 to 3 hours north, you're out in the countryside of Pennsylvania. West, you're out in the countryside of Pennsylvania, 2.5 to 3 hours south, you know, well, you're in the Maryland already, 2.5 to 3 hours east, you're out in the Atlantic Ocean. And it was just this contrast of the, you know, condensed city, packed city of Philly, looking at all this mass of buildings and humanity there. And it just struck me. That's when I said, this truly is the rat race down here.
Oh, it is. I want to jump back to California really quick with you because, you know, they have a lot of fires.
Yeah.
So did you help with the planning of how to get rid of the fires? And like, I just.
Not out there. No, but I was in charge of our wildland firefighting program for a little over 7 years. And so from our perspective here in Loveland and our jurisdiction, including the city, covers 200 square miles. So we go from the high plains of Colorado, just east of Interstate 25, all the way west up into the foothills. And then we had mutual aid agreements with the U.S. Forest Service, because there's areas that they cannot reach initially that we could reach. So the highest point in our jurisdiction was somewhere around 10,500 feet. So there's a lot of wild land in our area. So I was, heavily involved in the planning, the response and the mitigation and so forth with the wildland fires here in our jurisdiction, and responding to them as well, as a battalion chief, and sometimes being able to, respond to the wildland fires outside of the jurisdiction as well.
Gotcha. I don't even know if I'm allowed to ask this next question. It's always been on my mind. But I'm going to ask it, and you can't answer it. I get it. But what would you say is the biggest cause of fire starting? Is it like cigarette flicking a bud from, that, or some bit, how are they getting started?
Here in Colorado, it's lightning strikes.
Oh, really?
That's the number one cause of wildfires here in Colorado. And then behind that would be illegal campfires.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know, because I didn't know. I was like, I remember being here just in Texas. It was just a wooded little area, but it was all residential and commercial buildings. But it was just a gloom of smoke rising. And I was like, going, well, how did that get started? Somebody smoking on the highway, tired of the traffic, just flick out, their cigarette and boom.
That has happened. Well, it's dry. You said you're down in the Dallas area.
It's very dry.
Very dry. It's very dry up here too as well. And there's one fire in particular that I can recall. We were on duty. I was a lieutenant at another station, so I didn't get to respond to this particular one. But it was a construction site, residential construction site in the southwest part of our jurisdiction. And the truck showed up and was delivering rebar. The driver was kicking the rebar off the truck, and it hit a rock and sparked, and 200 acres later.
Wow.
So that's how dry. Plus, there were some other factors. It had the wind behind it, and it was uphill, things that, we would look at, when you get the wind and the topography, when they align and you get the fire, it's off to the races.
Yeah. And that's really, really sad. I actually think I had a guest on my show. I don't know what season. I wish I could remember being in the hospital, but I think she was impacted by the fires, she said. So that's really sad, knowing that the fire is coming towards your home and like trying to prepare and be safe and trying to grab everything. That's
sometimes you don't have any. Look at that mess that happened out in Lahaina, last year. People, just come, no chance. And I don't know the ins and outs of that, but when you look at people, the human factors, how people respond or do not respond, how they panic. I noticed a trend here in Colorado that because of the big fires that were occurring out in California, and I noticed this, I'm going to take a guesstimate here, somewhere around 2008 or 9 in that time frame. So the big fires out in California, of course, it gets all the press. People leaving the areas, subdivisions burning down, like what happened in San Diego and other parts. Well, I think that was being embedded in people's minds, so that when we would get the fires here, it's like, oh, we got to evacuate. We got to get out of here. Our house is going to burn down. It's going to be like the fires we've seen in Malibu and other places. And no, what I would try to convey to people is our vegetation is considerably different here in Colorado. It's different down in Texas, and it's different in California. And so that impacts the fire behavior. But regardless of that, when the fire is burning and people, they hit that panic mode, and all of a sudden, we're trying to get in and they're, wanting to get out and don't need to get out. There's not always a need to, grab grandma's pictures and Bible and boogie out of there. It wasn't always that need. So it really was a psychological aspect involved with the job. There are several psychological aspects involved with the job that never were present when I first came on it.
Yeah. So, that's right. Skeptical. I mean, wow, that makes me think of the eclipse that's coming up right now. I know they don't have enough coverage, but people are just drawn to this big eclipse that's going to last like 4 minutes. Yeah. And they booked their flight to Texas and it's going to be overcast. And I'm just like in my head, it's like, I may or may not walk outside to see it or not, but everybody's different. So, but I'm sure our fire stations are going to be busy. So,
well, it depends. People get crazy. People get stupid. And I'd had a conversation with one of our fire marshals one time, and he was adamant that, him and his staff were going to eliminate all the fires in the community. And I said, dream on, buddy. And I said, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
He said, you're dealing with human beings. The human beings do stupid things. All you got to do is you can get on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, and you can look at the stupid things that people do. When you got guys that are drinking and then you get fireworks in there, alcohol and fireworks, going to have a problem.
Yeah.
This notion, we're going to eliminate that stuff. Nah, no, we're not.
People are still doing it. I was thinking about America's Funniest Videos, just watching that, but TikTok and now Facebook with their reels, it's the same thing. But, I'm always like, no, I'm not going to ever watch those. I always told myself that. But I was in the hospital and got a TV. I just didn't want to turn it on. I noticed I just wanted to watch the Facebook Reels. They had some funny customer service one. It's like the dick drawing people. And I was like, oh, it's funny. It's going to make me laugh and fall asleep really quick and everything. But talking about Facebook really quick, have you ever seen these bracelets before? Not the top one, but the bottom. I have one that says hope and one that says faith. You haven't? So these are called snap bands. They're really, really cool. Yes, they're a sponsor of Keep Hope Alive. The pink one that I'm showing off right now, it says Faith. And you can only get that with the promo code HOPE, or you can try KHA, and you'll be able to get it in whatever colors. But the neat thing about snap bands, they have this elastic on the back. So if you were to pull it out, and just do a gentle little snap. It's all neuroscience-based, but it lets your brain think of something totally different. So it helps people with depression, PTSD, whatever you may be using it for. I'll use me as an example. As y'all know, I've been in the hospital, but nobody can ever find a vein on me. So I'm always praying whoever has to stick me, I feel bad for them. But I'll take this and go, I hope they find the vein on the first try. I'm praying. But, they'll do these different sayings, like they'll have peace and love and hope, not faith, but they have this whirlwind of different things and they call it the mantra word. So if you're saying the mantra with it, it will help redirect that focus. Now, with each purchase of a snap band, they give a portion to different organizations that help people with trying to defeat depression and PTSD, OCD and all that. So, but they come in all different colors. I love mine. They have black, brown, green, blue, hot pink and everything and all the different mantras. But I want you to check them out at www.snapbands.com. And let me spell that for you. It is SnapBandz.com. And you can also send me a quick note and I'll put it on the Facebook page again. But the promo code is HOPE. So other than that, you can snap the stigma out and have the bracelet that will help you redirect those thoughts. So, all right. So you were talking also that you had a podcast and then a book. So which one? I think the book would have came first. Yeah.
Yeah.
The book. So the tell book me about. Yeah, definitely. Tell me about the steps of writing the book and getting that out. Was it during the time that you had your legs thing, your knees or you hurt?
It was after. I was still on the job, in the fire department. And I had been encouraged for a number of years. My wife, my two daughters, they, you should write a book. You should write a book. And then people on my shift, I'd go out to the station, and there's times I'd pass on official information from staff meetings, but I like spending time with the crews, finding out what was going on with them, and our conversations would really flow like what's taking place here with you and I right now. And inevitably, leadership would come up, or some type of an issue would come up. I found out I was a battalion chief for maybe a month, and I started to see a pattern taking place. So I'd show up at a fire station and I'd get ready to leave, and somebody say, "Hey, chief, you got a minute?" And I chuckled to myself, "Yeah, I've just been here for 45 minutes. Yeah, I got a minute." But that was it seemed like that was a benchmark. At 45 minutes into a station visit, something would come up. "Hey, chief, you got a minute?" But that was a question that I heard a lot. And so they started saying, the people on the shift say, "Hey, you ought to write this stuff down. You ought to write this stuff down." Well, I did. My wife and I had another conversation, and this would have been in 2017, and about writing the book. And she said, "I heard this lady on the radio. Her name's Polly Latofsky. She's got a company called My Word Publishing in Denver. And she was on the radio talking about, self-publishing a book." So I found her on the internet. This was a Tuesday evening. I said, or Wednesday. "Hey, look," I said, "she's doing a lunch and learn tomorrow down in Denver," which worked out well because of Thursday. Normally that was a day when we had our chiefs meetings, but it had been canceled. So we went on down. Deb and I went on down, had the lunch and learn, and Polly laid out the pros and the cons of trying to find an agent and going with a publishing house or self-publishing, which is the route that we went. We formed our own company, Java House Publishing. But after lunch, we talked to Polly and another lady that was working with her at the time, Susie Schaefer, who that's who we subsequently stayed with when Susie moved back to California. And I remember standing out in the parking lot at the restaurant saying, "Well, I guess I'm writing a book." And I think you'll get a kick out of this, Nadine. I got tied in with a writing coach and an editor, and her name is Alexandra O'Connell, and she's called your resident wordsmith. Well, I looked at her area code and I said, "I know where that area code is." And I double checked it. Sure enough, Jersey girl. Yeah, Jersey girl living in the Denver area. And as you can imagine, I mean, we meshed. She understood my sense of humor, everything, because of that Jersey connection. And so I started writing the book, and I would send a chapter a month to Alexandra. She would send back tips, tell me, "Don't edit. Please don't edit. Just keep writing." And that's what I did. And I always say this when somebody asks about the writing process, I never, ever wrote the book on fire department time. Never did I do that. I did not believe that was ethical. Same thing when I had the opportunity to attend the National Fire Academy in Emmitsburg, Maryland. I went to a four-year executive fire officer program. And each year there was an applied research project attached to that particular class. I never, ever wrote on fire department time there either. It was all done, afterwards. I just did not feel that that was ethical to be writing, you know, my research papers or writing my book on fire department time. And so yeah, that contributed to, you know, taking longer, but that's fine. And I had to perform on-call duty as a battalion chief. So when I was doing on-call duty, I never wrote. And that added to the time as well. But Alexandria had said, hey, set a minimum number of words. So when you get writer's block, you can hit that. So I set 750. And usually I'd sit down with a cup of coffee and I would just start writing. Wrapped up that writing process and it went back to Alexandria. Then it went to a copy editor. Susie, she was overseeing everything. She was taking care of the Amazon and taking care of getting me tied in with an interior layout person, which her name's Michelle White. She's down in Florida. And then a cover designer, which he's here in Colorado, Nick Zellinger, up in Estes Park, Colorado. So she pulled all these things together. So I had a team. Even though it's called self-publishing, you know, there was a whole team that was involved with this. And it got released in print and then the ebook. At that point in time, it did not have the finances to move forward with the audiobook. However, that's where I'm at right now. This morning, I was uploading the audio files into ACX, which is part of Amazon. And I got to do a little bit more work associated with that. So I'm estimating here we're at the beginning of April. If everything flows like it should, the audiobook should be available by the end of April. So, yeah.
See, I tell all the authors, and you said you watched a couple, but always say, hey, do you have it in audio? Like, that is my biggest question because I like to put my AirPods in to listen to things as I'm winding down at night. So, but, you know, if somebody sends me a book, and they don't have audio, I will take the time to read it. And, you know, but both ways, I can only imagine having to do Audible. And that's when I asked about, do you do a podcast? Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, I know. That's good. That's good. Yeah. They like to have the author read the book. And, you know, that's, I'm happy about that. That's really good. I do want to jump back really quick about your daughters. So you talked about following family. They've all been here. Did they carry on anything like, you know, being an EMT, nurse, doctor? No.
My youngest daughter, Emily, she's the co-host on the podcast. Yay. And that had been up on my whiteboard for a long range project. And then her name's Emily. And then coming up towards October last year, Emily said, Dad, why don't we do a podcast together? And she's got a doctor that's down in Austin, Texas. And him and his sister co-host a podcast. And I thought, kind of, I listened to it before and I liked the format that they had.
Yeah.
So Emily's involved in that. With me, and she's got her own business as well. She makes cake pops, and her business is called Emily's Delights.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and they're fantastic. She really cuts out the sugar on them, but they're great. And they, my wife works with Emily in that business, and they customize the cake pops for people. Our oldest daughter, Rebecca, she's married to a guy that's in the Air Force, career Air Force guy. He's stationed up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, but they live down here, so he just commutes back and forth to the base.
Oh, okay.
And she's running an online business herself, a health coaching type business.
Nice.
Rebecca has been doing that, but no, it's really interesting. Over the years, when the girls were growing up, when I was off duty, Rebecca would always ask, what'd you guys have for supper last night? She didn't want to hear anything about the job. Emily would say, hey, Dad, what kind of cool calls did you go on?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, just completely opposite with that. But no, there was never Any interest in either one of them to pursue, a career in fire or EMT? Rebecca, our oldest, she for a while she did wind up as an eye technician at an eye doctor's place here in Northern
Yeah.
Colorado. It surprised us, and she really enjoyed that and really did well. But no, that right now, it ended with me. Now my brother, he's got two sons, both of them. One's a deputy sheriff in West Virginia, and the other one was working for a sheriff's office as well, but I don't know if he still is or not.
Well, it's continuing still. Yeah. And you know what? Things happen every day. There's changes. I became a certified wedding planner. And then nobody knows this. I'll share this little story with everybody in the world. So I grew up with epilepsy. I had my first grand mal seizure, and my daughter was at her dad's. I don't remember anything, but I know 7 hours went by. The next day, I don't know why, I went out and bought an expensive camera, built my website, watched a couple training videos, and bam, started my own company as a photographer. And then I grew and grew, and people kept booking. But people were like, "Oh, what school did you go to for your photography?" I was like, "I feel like I went to heaven and back, and now I'm a photographer." I don't even know how to answer it. It's like, but I learned as I go, and I have a great coach, and I've met amazing people along the way, but it's just been wonderful to capture those moments of time. But then I say the same thing about podcast. I would never in a million years think I'd be doing a podcast. And it's funny because I say I will never write a book. You can't sit me down for whatever amount of time unless I'm just lying in bed talking into a machine, blah, blah, blah. But everybody is what I'm hearing, and I keep thinking about it. Don't know if it's going to happen, but it's the health journey I've been on. So, but I was like, I don't know if I want to take the time and go into all those things, but through the podcast, I'll be through that. And another outlet is TikTok. I'm having fun with TikTok. I'll be like in there, like nobody knows what well, maybe they do know this. Bariatric surgeons, by law, they have a certain amount of time until another doctor can see you. And I don't know what that's called, but they're because I had this revision done, this doctor is the only one that can touch me, help me, see me. And I was like, it was so funny because they were telling me this and they were giving me morphine. And I was like, can't touch us, can't touch me. And I was like, oh, that'd be a fun song to just kind of play around with, But I try to be myself and open and put it out there, in the world. Don't ever let anything stop you. You can have bad health. Keep going, just be yourself. Enjoy what life is there, So,
Well,
but
you have to keep going.
you have to. There's no reason just to sit here and dwell like what could be. For me, I'm always mapping out what is the upcoming month going to look like for me, and taking the time to take care of me was important, but the price was I can't do podcasts. I have to put it on pause, figure out why I'm hurting so bad, and then it turned into emergency surgery. But I think the hardest thing is because I don't like letting people down, saying, I'm sorry, I have to reschedule. And that was really hard for me to do. But now I've picked up the pieces and I'm like, okay, one podcast a day. Then I'll jump into two again. And then I'll jump into three again if I have it in me. But it's just learning as you go. So, but that's cool that you're doing this podcast with your daughter and everything. Now, the cake pops, of course, she's probably doing all the bridal shows or party trade
She
shows and stuff
does
like that.
do, yeah, she does has done weddings and then also, you know, baby showers, bridal showers, and she does packages too for realtors because they customize the chocolates that go on top. And Emily, she's had her own health journey. I was on duty when she got T-boned. And so I responded to my own daughter. And, you know, that's, and so she suffered a concussion out of that. And then a couple of years later, as a result of that one, she passed out and got another concussion. And so she had a lot of compounding health problems over the years. And then, unfortunately, she had an abusive marriage. And, you know, she's now divorced and, you know, she's living back with us. And, you know, we're blessed. God's blessed us with, well, he's blessed me, you know, with a fantastic wife. We've been married now 36 years, over 36 years. September will be 37. And then, you know, two daughters. And they're both very, very supportive. Very, very supportive. I had a health issue myself, acute kidney failure and cancer back in 2013. And, you know, all three, you know, my wife and my daughters, you know, I mean, they were taking care of me and, you know, making sure that I wasn't doing anything that I shouldn't be doing. And so, you know, they just keep moving along themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good to have your support circle team for when you're not doing well, somebody you can rely on, you know. And the one thing I stress even to my boyfriend, he'll be like, how's your day? And I'll say, not good. I'm hurting really bad. And he made a comment. He's like, don't you have anything positive to say? I go, yeah, I'm here. You know, I was just like, but I'm not going to lie to you. That's what I told him. You know, if I'm having a bad day, that's kind of like when I do karaoke, I'll sing Honey, I'm Home. You know, I had a bad day, but when I have my good days, I also share those. But he's my, I don't think he realized it. He's the one person I can go to and just be open to. Like, I had to explain today, my body is telling me to take a big break, you know, like, hey, we need to have this break time. So, and heal and then get more active and go back to work and everything. So I worked out a plan with my doctor for that healing time. So, and I'm sure, you know, my mom, yeah, she's gone through kidney issues. My dad served in Vietnam and got exposed to Agent Orange and has heart issues and been through cancer. And he keeps fighting and fighting too. So your story is actually hitting home with me. So, hey guys, I did have to ask Jersey Rick the biggest question about football. And he follows. Can I say who you follow when you watch? He's an Eagles fan. I know everybody. I remember moving to Texas, and the first time I ever went to a bar with friends, somebody goes, so who do you follow for football? And I go, oh, the Philadelphia Eagles. You will get shot. Don't say that out loud. I was like, I will get shot. Why? Like, I couldn't understand. But, you know, now it's like, okay, I see the rivalry and everything. But they made a little bar in Plano and Austin Avenue, but they have an Eagles nest to go watch the games and stuff. And you're with the rest of the fans, but you can walk in there with that jersey, but there will always be a Cowboys fan there to boo me. And I'm like, good day to you too. You know, I just smile and move on. So, but yeah. So if people wanted to find information about you on social media, how would they go about doing that?
I have my business Facebook page, Fire Officer Leadership Academy, and then Rick Davis, you know, my personal page. I'm also on Instagram. I post quite a bit out on LinkedIn. I write a weekly blog. It gets posted up on my website on Monday mornings, and then tomorrow morning, I will go in and I will repost that out on LinkedIn. and then my Facebook business page. And then also I have a Facebook group solely for firefighters. It's called the Firefighters Leadership Network. And a person nice. Has to be, they either have to be a firefighter now or in the past to be part of that group. So those are ways people can reach out to me. My website is fireofficerleadershipacademy.com. And my email address is on there, rick@fireofficerleadershipacademy.com. And people can see, you know, the services that I offer, because I'm heavily involved in the fire service, as we talked about earlier, and providing coaching and mentoring to firefighters, and providing the leadership development. And then also one of my favorite topics I love teaching, I've got a class called Navigating the Sea of Decisions. I love teaching on decision making and situational awareness. So I stay active still in the fire service.
That is really good. So definitely, I'm going to read your book for sure. My way to audio is done. You know, let me know.
I'll let you know. It's one of those technical things. It's like, everything was going along fine, uploading it. People say, it's real easy to do this, Rick. And then they had the cover of my book. Emily helped me with that because I had to be a one-to-one. I learned about that. So we got that taken care of. And I hit the submit button after all the files. It's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, they want opening credits, closing credits, and a max five minute for retail use, you know, marketing type thing. It's like, oh, yeah. Well, it's not the end of the world. You know, Nadine, I can sit down and I worked with a lady here in Colorado with the recording equipment, and she did all the editing. She's done videos for me as well, because I have an online companion course that goes with my book. And her name's Karen Fournier, and with her business and went to her studio and recorded videos that are embedded. I built the online course myself, and Karen does great work.
Good. It's great that you have that team. So the one thing I know with my show, I want to bring on somebody to help out too, because, you know, with podcasts, it's funny, you know, people are like, well, is it a job? I go, right now I do it from my heart, you know, and some people don't understand that. And I made a comment, I am not Joe Rogan right now. It's like, you know, I can't do that. My heart, even if I wanted to, it's just, you know, no. So sometimes, I don't know with your podcast, if you, like, I have that buy me coffee thing, you know, but that's up to the listener, whether or not they want to contribute anything. But I'm just happy and grateful to be interviewing people and letting the world hear these amazing stories like what you had to share also. So, and, you know, I'm looking at the picture, but such a photographer in me. Move your head. I think it would be your right. No, your left. Oh, yeah. Okay. The Cedarville Fire Department. That is so cool. Look at, like, what year model was that?
1961. It's a 1961 fire engine, and the story behind that is it was manufactured by a company called Oren, O-R-E-N, in Roanoke, Virginia. However, the nameplate says Great Eastern Fire Apparatus out of Dunellen, New Jersey. The fellow that owned Great Eastern sold so many of these Oren fire engines that they worked out. I cannot remember all the fine details, but they worked out between Oren and this guy that they allowed him to put his Great Eastern Fire Apparatus nameplate on their rig. I took that photo. I did a lot. You probably think
that's awesome.
Anybody listening to this will say, Davis, you are nuts. But I've got somewhere in the area of 60,000 photos of fire apparatus, prints, slides, digital. I've traveled around the country. I photographed rigs around the country and in Germany, and I collect stuff. I've been collecting things since I was a little kid, patches and helmets and t-shirts and die-cast fire engines and fire extinguishers and history books related to the fire service. I have been immersed in the fire service for an awful long time.
See, I am drawn to fire engines for some reason. I don't know why, but it is something I like to take photographs of. And my dad lives out in Shawnee, Oklahoma. But every time I put in his address to go, it takes me on back roads. And there is a town called Wampanoag, Oklahoma, and they have the cutest fire engine. And I stopped, and my son's like, "What are you doing?" I go, "There's a fire engine. I got to take pictures." But it's the cutest little fire engine that I ever seen. I wish I knew how old it was, but I could go dig for that. And in Shawnee, and their downtown part, there was a fire engine leaving, and it's such a quiet little town, but it was just something made me take a picture, and it came out really good with the firemen. You know, there was one out, but they always have their arm out, it was so cool to capture that. So I don't know. I've been drawn to it. That's why I was like, scoot over.
Well, here's a tip for you. When you're taking a picture of a fire engine and you want to find out what year it is, there's a couple places that you can look on the older rigs, the ones that were the open cab. There'll be a plate, a manufacturer's plate, someplace up in the cab that will have the date of the manufacturer on there.
Okay.
Or the pump panel, which is, you know, that area right there where you see the gauges and the intake.
Oh, okay.
Most of the rigs will also have another plate there that you can look at, and it'll have the date of manufacture stamped on there.
Oh, that is so cool to know. It's so funny. I just don't think I could get that close to fire engine unless they were there for a school and, you know, hey, meet the firefighters and stuff like that. So well,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to say this, you know, so many people will come by to visit the firehouse or bringing their kids. And, yeah. You know, I enjoyed the adults that would ask the questions. They'll, hey, what do you guys do? How long do you work? Because what I see, you know, so many adults, they've got such a preconceived notion of what firefighters do. You know, they think they're just a bunch of, you know, knuckle dragging hose jockeys. You know, they watch the stupid shows that are on TV now, and they think they know. So for, you know, yourself to stop by the firehouse, ring the doorbell, ding dong, hey, you know, can I get a picture of your rig, and then start asking them questions about the job? That's really great. Yeah, they love it. That's really a great thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I think for kids who wonder, like, I'll ask this for kids. Does each station get a pet dog, Dalmatian?
We didn't have any dogs at Loveland Fire, but there are departments. You know, when I was heavily into taking pictures, there was a firehouse that I was at up in the northeast section of Philly, and they had a dog that was in there. So yeah, aww. You still find it, but you know, we didn't have that.
Yeah.
So. We had a bobcat wander into one of our fire stations one time.
A bobcat. Wow. It must have, you guys must have been cooking something really good.
Yeah.
But I love, you know, just watching by shows. It's family unity. And I can see how that is, like, being with family, because the majority of your time is on the job. So. Yeah. You get to know everybody on the, like, and they become your brothers or sisters, you know? So, that's really cool. That's cool to see. But I mean, you've done so much, and I want our listeners to go and visit the podcast that him and his daughter do. Get the book. As I mentioned before, guys, I have a store link on www.keephopealivepodcast.com. Click on it, scroll at the bottom. It goes in order. So you'll find his book there, Furnace, right?
The Furnace of Leadership Development.
Yes. Okay. So I got that in parentheses. But, you know, out of everybody I've had the pleasure of talking to out of my podcast, I think you are my first firefighter person, which is really amazing. So yeah. And yeah, and my first Jersey Philly person who knows what a tasty cake is.
So, and Wawa.
And a Wawa. Yeah, definitely. So, but I just want to say thank you so much for coming the show today and sharing the information that you did. I learned a lot, and you know, I hope the listeners got to listen and learn too, because I mean, I like to dive into those questions. And like before I started talking to you, I was like, I want to ask him about the good and the bad. And you mentioned that earlier, and you mentioned good and bad. And I just made this little smirk. I was like, he heard my thoughts or something, but I didn't even get to ask you because you already mentioned it, which was amazing. So, but just learning everything that you do and learning about your family and the talks about, you know, each kid being different, like one was very interested and the other one was like, okay. But both of them, you got kids, you got a wife, you've been married for a long time. You've got to see the United States too. That's what I'm picking up on. So you got to travel and be around, and you also got to serve. And that's amazing too. So helping out the world, I'm calling it, helping out the world. Yes, you really are. So, and also really quick, guys, I want to thank the other sponsors who keep hope alive or keep hope afloat. So, as I mentioned, we talked about lifeonrecord.com, your vintage rotary phone that is a guest book that you can use for any event. So, not only weddings, you can do birthdays. I am going to say funerals because it is important. It's the gift of voice. So check them out. Our next one was snapbands.com, snapbands.com. These beautiful bracelets here that help you if you have depression, OCD, PTSD, I would say. It works and triggers a thought with a mantra word like faith. And remember, hope is the promo code to get faith in any color that you would like. So check them out. Then we have Ogden Ventures LLC. Marcus Ogden is a former football player. He is a podcast host and best-selling author. You can check him out at www.marcus, and it's spelled M-A-R-Q-U-E-S, then last name O-G-D-E-N. com. So check him out. He's very good at what he does. Then this is a good one for your daughter too. We got bridalshowsinc.com. So if you were planning an event in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Naomi Butler, she's been doing this for so many years, but she hosts different bridal shows to showcase the vendors and what their talents are. So you can go meet them and book your next vendor for your next event. Then I have Deborah Rose with Miles and Smiles Events.com. Her background is an investigator, which is really, really cool. But she does events. She does handwriting analysis and lipstick readings. And this woman is amazing. She pinned where I used to work, the three of us in the office, right down to a T, and I've seen her in action at her events. I could just sit there and not do the rest of the event. I just want to watch her with other people getting it right each time. So check her out. Then we have Bryce Harney. It's www.brycemagic.com. You might have seen him on TV. He's a magician and mind mentalist doing big corporate events, church events, and stuff like that. He is so good. Go to YouTube, type in Bryce Harney Magic, and pull up and watch some of his great magician stuff he does. Then we have richmondpunch.net. Richmond graduated from the Juilliard's top honors. He's a violinist, has been in the event industry over 30 years. He has also performed in front of 1,000 people and had 2 spots on Lifetime shows to play the violin. So check out his information. Our last one is TK Hair Salon. I love them. If you're coming to Plano, Texas, or just Dallas area, check them out at www.tkhairsalon.com. They do men's, women's, children's, cuts, perms, hair color, stylists. They get all my grays out. I got to go back again. But they do it all. And they are fabulous and friendly and down to earth, which I love. Now, wherever you guys find your podcast, you'll be able to find Keep Hope Alive. And here is my promise to you really quick. I'm going to make this quick announcement. You guys know that the show has been on a little pause because of my health. I want you, my fans, to know that I'm thinking of you every day, even my guest speakers. Just because my health is not good right now doesn't mean it will stop. I'm going to keep going and going. And if you're on my TikTok page for Keep Hope Alive, you'll see a couple of ones. Hey, I'm keeping hope alive. But that's me being me. I want you guys to know I love you. I'm with you. I'm planning for more episodes. And I want to thank you for watching the shows. So if you would like to be a guest also, just send me an email at nadine@keephopealivepodcast.com. And once again, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciated our talk today and everything. So until next time, guys, make sure to get his book too. We'll see you next time. Love and light. Bye-bye.